Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Golf star Tiger Woods' car crash near Los Angeles was the big sports story this week here in the United States. And it also made headlines in Africa, Asia, Europe, and around the world. The 45-year-old Woods had surgery after suffering serious injuries to his right leg and additional injuries to his foot and ankle. He is currently hospitalized at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. Tiger Woods could face more surgeries and weeks of recovery simply to be able to walk again. Harris Okada is the president of African Tour Golf Foundation. In an interview with Iron Mike Imbonye, Okada said Tiger has been a big inspiration for many young golfers in Africa.
Oh, it's a tragedy, a deep tragedy to the world, and especially to us Africans, because it was Tiger Woods motivated a lot of blacks, including Nigerians. Golf has grown in this part of the world because of Tiger Woods. So I, as a person, was out of the passion and the love I had for Tiger Woods. I started playing golf about 15 years ago. So it's a big shock to Africans. Actually, for us as a foundation, we raised Tiger Woods Foundation in 2016, and we went to Florida to meet them. I had a meeting with them, and for them to come and help us to develop golf in Africa. And they said that with the monitoring what we are doing, at some point they will come. And for us, when we had this, we pray that nothing happens to him, because we still have hope that he could be able to come to Nigeria and help us to develop golf in this part of the world.
Do you think Tiger Woods and his professional golfing career has inspired some young Africans to take to golfing as a profession?
You know, we go to schools to teach children golf, and immediately you ask them who is their model, who is their lesson. They all shout Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods. Every young African young golfer today is because of Tiger Woods, because he's a model in terms of, he's a black. Golf has always been seen as a white man game for the affluence and rich, until Tiger came into a limelight. So it is a very big motivator to Africans, young and middle age and equally elderly. Like most people, like I said, in our platform and in our, where everybody news, people have been pouring, praying, we are praying for Tiger Woods. Everybody, it's been like a massive outpouring that people are praying for him to be able to, you know, survive and come out of this. So it's a big motivator to Africans, both young, middle, and older golfers. We have in Nigeria, we have over, without exaggeration, this one about maybe over 150,000 golfers in Nigeria, and it's growing by numbers, you know, on a daily basis. More in Abuja alone now, in the last 1 year, about 3 golf courses have been developed. So golf is gradually growing in the part of the world. It's out of love and the distinct that are brought into the game.
Do you also think that Africa or Nigeria will one day produce a Tiger Woods?
Oh, definitely. We just finished an event in Owerri, and that event is focused on the ages of children, young youth of 18 to 30 years. And we qualified 5 people who are going to turn pro now. From the 8th of March, the African Golf Tour is going to start 2021 pro season. And those 5 will join the currently existing pros to play. So we have gone back to, you know, in the last 5 years, what we have done was to use the existing pros to test run this thing. But we realize that we have to go back to school. Now we have gone back to schools. We are teaching golf in schools, in different schools, and we are going to try as much as possible to expand it. We are going to produce. You know, the thing is that most people are not too much aware of golf. Golf is not a sport that is being embraced by everybody. Even the fact that they're only sports, which is somehow true because of the availability of the facility for the younger ones to train is not there. In this part of the world, there are no public golf courses or public driving range where a child who doesn't have money or somebody who doesn't have money can walk in and practice. No, it's all about membership clubs. And that is the thing we have been shouting and talking. So we are finding a way to see if we can start doing public driving range where somebody can just walk in, pick some golf ball and learn how to play golf. Because golf is one of Tiger Woods is the richest sportsman in the world. So golf is a big, big money spinner for every country. So if you see what the Asians are doing now, look at the LPGA, the ladies one, all the Asian ladies have taken over. And if you go to Asia, the men are aggressively trying to take over from the US. So golf is a big, is a provider of jobs for the youth. So we are trying to, but we don't have government support. So it's the same case everywhere in Africa. So just, but we have to try to do our best. So we're going to produce somebody like Tiger Woods in less than no time.
That's Harris Okada, president of African Tour Golf Foundation. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Harris Okada, president of African Tour Golf Foundation. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Harris.
Ever since our ancient ancestors gazed into the night skies to look at stars and other celestial objects, humans have long wondered if we are alone in the cosmos. This is Rick Pantaleo. Seth Shostak, senior astronomer at the SETI Institute, joins me on the science edition of Press Conference USA, and we're going to talk about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Samson Omale joins us once again with another spicy package of African sports news. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sunny. The Confederation of African Football Elective Congress is scheduled for March 12th in Rabat, Morocco. On Thursday in South Africa, Patrice Motsepe from South Africa, one of the four candidates vying for the presidency of the Confederation of African Football, launched his 10-point manifesto, which he tagged Building African Football to Be the Best in the World. Patrice Motsepe says investment in development, growth, global competitiveness, and the sustainability of football in African countries are at the heart of building African football to become the best in the world.
Governance, transparency, ethics, auditing global best practices. Now, you've got to be very careful. You can't hope to be a president of an organization and you spend most of your time talking down or criticizing. So my starting point is to pay my respects to President Isahayatu, say, good work, and to pay my respect to Ahmad and the leadership of CAF, the CAF Exco. The starting point is to say, let's all work together and improve on those areas where there are weaknesses. The governance policies of FIFA are an excellent guide, and of course we've got to comply with them, but the objective must be global best practices. We will get support and partnerships from the private sector when we show them, come, let's talk about how do we make it more transparent, more compliant with governance, more compliant with auditing, global best practices. And they will support. You know, the way we run the AFCON, the way we run the Champions League, we've got to increase the prize money.
The mining billionaire revealed that good governance, global best practices, investment in African football infrastructure, increasing prize money and statutory reforms will be high on his agenda if he's elected as CAF president.
There are many companies all over the world who wants to give money to football, but they want to be comfortable that the money will not go into the pocket of the leadership of football and that the money will indeed be used to develop, to grow, to contribute towards the improvement in the quality of football in Africa. Within the first 9 to 12 months, I'm going to visit every single African country, everyone, and sit down with the leadership and talk about what are the priority development and growth projects? Prize money for winning the Champions League. We've got to increase it. And we can increase it because, you know, we can pay the players more. And we can use some of that money to help us with the transport and all of the other expenses. So we've got to increase the prize money.
Mr. Musepe is running against Jack Anoma of Ivory Coast, Augustin Senghor of Senegal, and Mauritanian Ahmed Yahya. And now to the CAF Under 20 African Cup of Nations holding in Mauritania, where semi-finalists in the competition are beginning to emerge. The black satellite of Ghana goalkeeper Danladi Ibrahim was the hero, saving one penalty, while another came off rattling the crossbar as Ghana beat Cameroon 4-2 in penalties in Nouakchott on Thursday to qualify for the semi-finals. The game was forced to penalties after a 1-1 stalemate in regular and extra time, and the Ghanaians proved to be the better on penalties, beating the fancied young Indomitable Lions. In the late game on Thursday, debutant Uganda beat Burkina Faso 5-3 also on penalties. Other star Chieka Boudia in Nouakchott to book a place in the semi-final after the game ended goalless in regulation and extra time. In today's matches, first time as Central African Republic and Gambia will clash in the late evening kickoff in the final quarterfinal match after the early kickoff that had Morocco and Tunisia fighting for a semi-final place. Staying with football news, Shaleen Boysen, the new head coach of the South Sudan senior women's national team, Bright Starlets, has assumed duties after arriving in South Sudan on Wednesday. Boysen, who holds a CAF A license, was recently the performance analyst for South Africa's team at the 2020 CASAFA Women's Championship. South African Boysen was given a 2-year contract. She spoke to my colleague James Butty on her new assignment.
Coach, first of all, congratulations on your appointment. Why did you accept to coach the South Sudan Women National Soccer Team?
I think it was a great opportunity for me to invest in African football. And when I was looking at what they wanted to do with their women's program, I felt like it was a perfect fit for both of us. I love to coach and teach. They want to grow, so yes, I think it was a perfect fit. And when you're talking about a relatively new country, but they are fully independent and they have come a long way. I'm happy to be here to help support and grow the program. Now it will be about building and sustaining.
We will be hearing from Coach Celine Boysen in the days to come. Meanwhile, Continental Women's Champions, the Super Falcons of Nigeria, are back in the country after they kicked off the reign of American coach Randy Waldrum on an impressive note by winning the inaugural edition of the Festival Women's Trophy, otherwise known as the Turkish Women's Cup, in Antalya, Turkey. The Super Falcons won all their three matches at the four-team invitational tournament held under strict COVID-19 protocols between February 17th and the 23rd. Randy Waldrum is the coach of the Super Falcons.
Well, I think, you know, from a playing perspective, I want to take what the talent here, the style of football from Nigeria, we want to build on that. But I also think we, after observing, you know, the friendlies and in the last World Cup, I think there's some things in terms of the way we play where we can even do a better job of possession, keeping the ball when it's time to do so, and making a good decision on when it's time to counter quickly and use our speed. And so I think we can, as far as the playing style goes, I think we can expand and build on what's already there from a style standpoint. I think, you know, in general, from the ambition of for the team moving forward is certainly the goal is to consistently get out of group play and have a deep run into every World Cup and to become world champions. I don't think you go to the tournament to play the game just to be there. You know, you want to play to win. And so obviously that's a goal to get there. Now, I think there's also a method to it and there's a plan to build the structure and put everything in place to make sure that we do well. But I think it's really important that not only in 2023, but moving forward with the country, I think it's real important that year in and year out, Nigeria is finishing in the top four, finishing, you know, in at that level, because I think if you put yourself in the top four, then anything can happen. You know, you have the opportunity to at that point to win the World Cup. So I think the consistency of finishing high in every competition is has to be a goal.
And on to athletics. The lawyers of South Africa's Caster Semenya said on Thursday that the two-time Olympic champion is going to the European Court of Human Rights. The lawsuit is to challenge perceived discriminatory World Athletics regulations that prohibit her from competing in certain women's track events unless she medically lowers her naturally high testosterone levels. The 800 meters champion has already lost two legal appeals, but her lawyers say that there has been a violation of her rights and wants the Human Rights Court to examine the rules, ideally in time for the delayed Tokyo Olympics. Athletics governing body World Athletics says that her levels of testosterone are much higher than that of a perceived typical female range, concluding that this gives her and other athletes like her an unfair advantage over other female runners. Elias Makori is a Kenyan-based sports editor for the Nations Group. I asked him if Caster Semenya is fighting a lost battle.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think it's going to be really, really tough for Caster to pull this one off, because, of course, it's the third time that she's seeking redress or recourse, if you want, because, you know, the first time she lost at the CAS Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland in 2019. And then again, the Swiss Supreme Court, you know, also turned down her case. And now she's going to Strasbourg, to the European Court of Human Rights. I don't see anything changing here. It's going to be very different because World Athletics, you know, that's before that, the International Association of Athletics Federations, the IAAF, you know, put together a watertight case. The argument is that these athletes with high testosterone levels actually, you know, have unfair advantage over others, and it's been scientifically proven by the medics, scientists at World Athletics.
Let's stick with athletics, where Athletics Kenya just banned its outlets from competing at the Kilimanjaro Marathon in Tanzania over concerns about the COVID-19 pandemic. Is this decision too harsh, you think?
Indeed, Athletics Kenya issued a statement saying that they're not going to give consent or permission for athletes to travel out for various international competitions, especially those with not too clear protocols of COVID-19. And these include the Kilimanjaro International Marathon, which was to be held in Tanzania, you know, this weekend. Some athletes had already traveled, but, you know, some of them actually traveled without the consent of Athletics Kenya. And the federation is trying to, you know, make sure that they follow the protocols that the government has put in place, saying that any athlete, any sports person traveling out for competition must make sure that the COVID-19 protocols are adhered to the letter.
That was Elias Makori, sports editor at the Kenyan Nations Group. He spoke to me from Nairobi. In basketball news,
have Kenya got anything left in the tank? They played so well. It's been an incredible performance. A long two is good! Unreal! Extraordinary play! Extraordinary moment! Kenya have beaten Angola at the buzzer!
And that was how the Morans, Kenya men's national basketball team, created one of the major upsets at the just concluded AfroBasket 2021 qualifiers held in Tunisia and Cameroon. The woman behind that success is Australian Elizabeth Mills. Miss Mills is the first woman to coach an African men national basketball team. She has been speaking of her success after she led the Kenyan national basketball team to their first AfroBasket finals after a 28-year wait and the historic defeat of Angola. In the process, she speaks of her journey into the world of basketball coaching.
I started coaching basketball at 16 and then decided to take it pretty seriously by studying sports science and sports management at university, and then I did my master's in coaching in 2013.
The Australian revealed that she has deployed a digital coaching approach, to which paid off in their 74-73 defeat of African basketball powerhouse Angola.
Me coming in allowed this team to elevate its game in terms of playing a more international style of basketball that is continental that we see at FIBA events. So more structure on offense, more strategy on defense, better communication. I think we had players all on the same page, and I brought in data analytics or sports analytics and film analysis, so we were really prepared, and that was our advantage.
It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale with a spicy package of African sports news. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Here in the USA, the state of Michigan's attorney general says John Gettert, a former U.S. Olympic gymnastics coach, has died by suicide. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Gettert died after Attorney General Dana Nessel announced charges were filed against him, including sexual assault and human trafficking.
It is alleged that John Gettert used force, fraud, and coercion against the young athletes that came to him for gymnastics training for financial benefit to him.
Gettert was coach of the U.S. women's team that won a gold medal in 2012 at the London Olympics. Gettert also had ties to former sports doctor Larry Nassar, who's in prison.
The victims suffer from disordered eating, including bulimia and anorexia, suicide attempts and self-harm, excessive physical conditioning.
Nessel says many of these victims still carry these scars from Gettert's behavior to this day. I'm Ed Donahue.
Thanks, Ed. The National Basketball Association's longest current winning streak belongs to the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets trounced the visiting Orlando Magic Thursday night for their eighth consecutive victory. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
Kyrie Irving had 27 points and 9 assists in the Nets' eighth consecutive win, a 129-92 dismantling of the Magic.
We just want to stay collectively aligned on the same goal, and that's just to play, to a certain level.
The Nets now have their longest winning streak since the franchise moved from New Jersey to Brooklyn. Larry Shammond added 19 points and 9 rebounds for the Nets, who blew open the game with a 26-4 run spanning halftime. The NBA's highest scoring team reached 100 points for the 20th time, already tying a franchise record in only 34 games. James Harden furnished 20 points in the rout. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Turning to tennis, our big story this week was Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka winning the men's and women's singles titles at the Australian Open. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Craig Gabriel in Melbourne looks back on their victories.
The love affair continues, and Novak Djokovic remains passionate about the Rod Laver Arena. The world number one has won his 9th Australian Open and maintains his record of never losing a final here. He outplayed Daniil Medvedev and claimed the prize in 1 hour 53 minutes, 7-5, 6-2, 6-2. The Russian had some small chances, but Djokovic was unrelenting.
It was very challenging for me to keep my mind serene and keep my focus directed into what matters the most. I mean, I have put a lot of energy and time along with my team to be here, sitting with a trophy. So I'll take a lot of positives out of this month here in Australia and see what the rest of the season is going to look like.
The first set was vital. Djokovic jumped to a 3-love lead, but Medvedev leveled. But at 6-5, with the Russian serving to stay in the set, Medvedev lost serve.
I didn't play bad, but I didn't play my best level. Probably he made his game that good today that I couldn't stay at my best level. I cannot say much more than this. He was better than me today. Could have done things better for sure, yes, but I didn't manage to, so that's why I don't have the trophy.
Even though he broke at the start of the second set, he wasn't convincing, and Djokovic struck right back and got on a roll. The crowd had found their voice. The Rod Laver Arena was half full under the spectator cap due to COVID protocols, but the Serb fans was certainly making a noise. In the third set, like the previous two, Djokovic served first, so most of the time Medvedev was playing catch-up. Djokovic's high level of play was reaching another plateau, and with Medvedev serving to stay in the championship, Novak made no mistake on the first championship point he got. A high backhand flick saw the ball land in, and Novak Djokovic had clinched the title. It's his 18th career major, of which 50% have now come in Australia.
When you're a young tennis player, I think 99.9% of players, that kids that get a racket in their hands and start dreaming about what they want to achieve is Grand Slam, winning a winning a major. I do enjoy, you know, the success every single time even more, because I know that the longer the time passes, the more difficult it's going to become for me to get my hands on the major trophy, because you have, of course, new young players coming up.
He's now just two behind Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal's record. Naomi Osaka has become just the 12th woman in the Open era, which goes back to 1968, to win multiple Australian Opens. She defeated Jennifer Brady 6-4, 6-3 in 77 minutes to hoist the Daphne Akers Memorial Trophy.
I put them in my living room, actually, because for me, it serves as a really good inspiration. Like, during my preseason, I would look at the Australian Open trophy from the time before, and I would really feel inspired to try to win another one.
Osaka raced to a 4-love lead in the second, and credit to Brady as she rallied a bit, but it was not enough. Naomi came up with a big serve on championship point, and Jen couldn't really control the return, and it went out as Osaka, with her face beaming, raised her arms in victory.
For me, my feelings, I'm really happy right now. I think this is a moment that I've been working for during the entire preseason. And you know, it's really weird when you get to that final point, you start trembling because you can think of like the what ifs. For me, I feel like I'm living in a what if right now.
Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
Thanks, Craig. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with a report on the coronavirus vaccine, this year's Tokyo Games, and the 2032 Olympics. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. This week, Ghana became the first country to receive coronavirus vaccines through the UN-backed COVAX program. The initiative aims to provide countries equitable access to safe and effective vaccines. And coupled with the worldwide immunization campaign already underway, Olympic organizers are encouraged that they will achieve their mission to stage a safe and successful Tokyo Games. However, on Thursday, International Olympic Committee Vice President John Coates told reporters that despite vaccines becoming more widely available, inoculations are not required for Olympic athletes to compete at the upcoming games.
Not compulsory. We can't do that. Some parts of the world, they religion legally, but it's certainly being encouraged. And the IOC has an agreement with COVAX where it's helping to facilitate the distribution of vaccines. We are expecting that the latest that our team will be vaccinated in June.
Earlier this month, Olympic organizers published a playbook of new rules that will be enforced to prevent this summer's influx of athletes into Japan from further spreading the virus. One guideline states athletes and staff must show proof they have tested negative before departing for Tokyo, with the probability of being tested again once they arrive. And Coates says the focus is also on getting competitors in and out of the Olympic Village as quickly as possible.
We have to make the Olympic Village and the venues the safest place in Tokyo, and that's what we're doing. We would last week we had 4 days of operational planning. We're down now to looking at the seating on the buses to make sure there's the correct distancing. Well, that's all very well. We suddenly need double the fleet of buses, and there's a lot of buses involved.
Olympic organizers also hope to include spectators at the upcoming games. It's up to the Japanese government to decide how many fans will be in attendance, and a final decision on that is expected by April. John Coates is also president of the Australian Olympic Committee, and on Thursday he expressed his excitement after the IOC confirmed the city of Brisbane as the preferred bid to host the 2032 Olympic Games.
It's a significant recognition of the way we've worked together, the three levels of government, the Paralympic Committee and the Australian Olympic Committee, in presenting this bid together. I think that was recognised as well.
Brisbane is the capital of Queensland and one of several cities and countries that expressed interest in the 2032 Games, including Indonesia, Budapest, Doha, and China. But favorable weather, a good master plan, and experience with organizing major events put Brisbane at the top of the list. And Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk adds, Australia's high percentage of existing venues also gave them the edge.
We already have 85% of the venues at the moment. It's a new norm, which means it's a game changer. We don't have to build huge stadiums that are not going to be used in the future. And this gives us hope and opportunity as we go through our economic recovery and plan for the future. It gives every single one of us hope that it puts Brisbane firmly on that international map.
The last time the state of Queensland hosted an event was the Commonwealth Games in 2018, and John Coates says he will conclude all requirements in his bid to host the 2032 Olympic Games by early May. And that is all from me for today and for the week. Back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. And that wraps up the February 26th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.